Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Roscoe, and welcome to the latest episode of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. We are fresh off our trip from Bristol City. I'm here with Stuart Watson, Alex Jones, and of course, the podcast is sponsored by Stardust Spirits. And I can just about say it these days, Molek, you la, sort of, yeah. Yeah, I think I've got nods, got a similar approval there from Stuart Watson, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for introducing me. And we're getting there with Molecular.
Yeah. Love that, my friend. Love that. I also went a bit mad for breakfast this morning. I just kept going squash. Alex Jones, you enjoyed that. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah. Enjoyed it. Interesting. You did that about 10 times. My favourite bit was then when we were waiting to meet down in the lobby of the hotel to leave. It was nice and quiet. I was just me and the receptionist sat behind the desk, and you just came down and you looked me dead in the eyes and just went, squash. And I understood it. And I don't think she really did and probably thought there was something wrong with you, but it was good fun.
Yeah. I then gave my card to her and said, yeah, can I check out, please? And then, yeah, that's the only time I'll ever see her. So the only reason why I said squash is basically there was squash at breakfast. So I just went squash. But yeah, we've just got back to our homes after the trip to Bristol City. Salute to all the town fans listening who would have done it, I'm sure, in the day, and they got home in the early hours and were at work. So a big salute to you. But we obviously had work after the game. We got into our hotels probably at midnight, and then we did some other bits and bobs. And now we're here to bring you a podcast, hopefully in full, where the audio is fine, because we know we had issues on the Monday's pod. I'm going to just clarify, it was not my fault, okay? I know there's a few people saying, oh, maybe Roscoe didn't save it properly. No, it's basically the system we use just didn't work properly. So hopefully this will be audio dreamland for you, everybody. Hopefully it will be nice and clear as we break down Town's latest game, which was a 1-1 draw against Bristol City. Stuart Watson, Alex Jones, we were all there to watch it in the flesh. Where do you want to start? We're going to hear from Kieran McKenna, Alex Palmer as well. We're going to hear from Kieran McKenna first of all, and then we'll discuss the big talking points. So over to you, K-Dog.
Kieran, verdict on that as a point, as a performance,
please? Yeah, hard fought point. I think performance in the game had different spells to it, really. I thought we started really well, imposed ourselves in the game with real confidence, real authority. So we're really pleased with that. That was one of our big targets for tonight. Then they've executed really well on a set play. We've got one or two details wrong. And that really came against, I think, the context of the start of the game. And then that changed the whole momentum, really, in the stadium. And, of course, got them really up. They had a couple of big sort of transition moments after that. And we battled to get control of the game and break them down, but it was also, you know, there was always that sort of transition threat throughout the game. So, I think from that point to work our way back to get the draw, well-worked move for the penalty, a couple of other well-worked moves. I think there's positives to take. The players really stuck at it. Spirit was good, worked hard for it. Certainly could have controlled it a little bit better in the second half in terms of controlling some of the transition moments. But to be fair to them, they're very good at that. So when you give them that early goal and sort of ignite their team in the stadium, then it was always going to be tough. So, we'll take the positives. Certainly the goal and the set play is a frustrating one, and we need to work really, really hard to improve that moment. But other than that, yeah, we made what was going to be a tough night really tough. So from that position to get a point, I think we have to take it.
Okay, then. Kieran McKenna on the draw. Stu, going to go over to you first of all. Where do you want to start? There was obviously a lot of changes, 6 changes in total. But overall reflection on the point at Ashton Gate?
3 words, work in progress. And I know people are going to increasingly get a bit bored and frustrated hearing that, but they are what they are at this moment in time. They're a group of new players collectively finding their feet as a team, as individuals. And you mentioned there are a lot of changes going into this game. A lot of things to work on defensively, offensively, which we'll discuss in greater depth now. But ultimately, they've come away from Bristol City, a side who finished sixth last season, a side who've made a good start this year. I think they'll be up there again. And they've got an away point. And that's not to be sniffed at in the circumstances, I don't think.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, Bristol City, not a bad team. You know, got on the playoffs last year, who, of course, got a new manager who's Austrian, not German, who I keep getting mixed up with. You were impressed by him, Stu, in his post-match, just with some of his phrases.
Yeah, it's just a little bit of lost in translation with Gerard Struber. He described the Bristol City goal as the Rob Atkinson creating a tower to score his header. It's kind of the Austrian version of towering header, which I liked. He talked about a player having handshake qualities, which I think must be an Austrian term, which is kind of trustworthy. You know, he does what it says on the tin. It's probably the Austrian version of Ronsil. I liked some of his turns of phrase, and he was someone that made sure he shook everyone's hand before and after the press conference, came across well. And I thought his team played with a bit of character. They were certainly a real threat on the counter-attack. We knew that, you know, he talked about that sort of stressful diagonal football, and we certainly saw that in operation last night, didn't we? They were lightning on the counter-attack and caused a few headaches. So I do think that they're a good side. They're a settled side, and I think they'll be up there. So for Ipswich to have done what they did last night, not only get a point, but have long periods of dominance in the game, okay, didn't do enough with that dominance. But I'm still glass half full with the way things are going and also with last night.
Yeah, very much so. AJ, should we talk about the changes? Because, yeah, we know it's going to be a potential rotation because of the Saturday, Tuesday, Sunday with the derby in mind. But six, were you expecting as many as them? And a few, obviously, first full league debuts for some players?
Definitely was not expecting six. I was kind of probably in the camp of maybe four. It was a weird one because I think for me, when I looked at the changes that I would have made, I was kind of getting to the territory of saying there are players that I want to give opportunities to was a big thing. And yes, it's important to rotate. I think there are still players that could have gone again from the start. It's good to give George Hurst a rest and Jaden Philogene a rest and Jens Kajuster a rest. I think that at least two of those probably could have started this game, but it's also about giving opportunities out as much as it is about resting. And you've got players like Ivan Azon, who made his full debut, who's impressed off the bench in the last few weeks, looked really sharp. You've got others who stepped in. Nunez, of course, is the other full debut within that. Being able to give another start to Jack Clark. He hasn't had one, I don't think, since kind of the end of August after that little run there. Tube Rackpom in and out a little bit as well. I think it works. I like the idea of having a settled back line, which is something that the Ipswich, I think, need. Having Davis, Greaves, O'Shea and Furlong, that has been what Kieran McKenna has wanted really from the start from his back line, and then being able to tweak what was ahead of him. So it's giving players opportunities. It's obviously resting others. Then it's about finding the right balance. You want to give these guys the chance to impress and to shine. But when you make a lot of changes, it then means that you can end up being a little bit disjointed. There can be a little bit of, well, things that are lost in translation between certain players because they've not played very many competitive minutes. It's a front four that probably in spells has only played maybe 20 minutes at a time together in certain parts of that team, especially in attack. So that was kind of the balance that Ipswich had to find. Are these players ready to step up and start championship games and impact games, but also respect that this is not an easy situation for them to all come into at the same time?
Kieran McKenna's reasoning afterwards was, you know, I asked him about six changes and he almost sort of had to stop and think about it and go, yeah, it was six, wasn't it? But he said six sounds worse than it was because it's really only three changes from the unchanged lineups we saw from Sheffield United through to Blackburn, and that it was part rotation ahead of the Portsmouth game. And this was really edging back towards the teams that were starting to get settled before then. So I can see the logic there. Look, Greaves back in for Kipre. Kipre was pretty solid and assured against Portsmouth, but I think it's right, as Alex says, that some consistency is built across that back line, certainly in the central defensive unit. Don't think it was any great surprise to see Jens Kajusta rested in the middle of a busy schedule, given his lack of pre-season and the knee injury that he's managing. Important to get Marcelino Nunez up to speed at some point. Then it was like, did the entire front four need to change? But then you go through it one by one, and I thought Casey McAteer's pace should have been suited to this sort of game as a sort of a counter-attacking type of match. Akpom is probably going to be someone that plays a lot of games this season, has obviously been brought in to be a key man and started a couple of games before Portsmouth. Hurst, although he'd scored a couple of goals, by his own admittance, hadn't been in sort of top form with his overall game and a few things bouncing off him in his link play not being there. So there's certainly some logic behind sort of mixing that up going into this game. Probably the biggest talking point was dropping Jaden Philogene, a man who's in form and scoring goals. But can you have any real, you know, Jack Clark has been really pushing off the bench, as we've said as well. So there's logic behind probably all of the decisions. It's a very fine balancing act that Kieran McKenna faces now. He's built this squad with such depth, and especially at a time now where there's no real injuries. On one hand, he wants to get everybody up to speed. He wants to keep everybody feeling happy and motivated and never far away from being on that football pitch. But the thing that really, I think, held them back in the Premier League last year was never being able to get a consistent team out, never being able to build any sort of chemistry or partnerships or relationships. And I don't want them to sort of slip into that this season with kind of in the search of keeping everybody happy, constant chopping and changing, and you don't get a settled team. So that's the art of management, and that's what Kieran McKenna faces at the moment. But hopefully some of those players, not just from last night but from Saturday as well, are going to be that little step closer to being fully fit and firing, because I think there's a few that are still working their way up to that at the moment.
Yeah, very much so. And yeah, that's sort of key of the success that Ipswich had prior. You know, it was a settled team. You sort of knew everyone is going to be playing. You know, there's a few changes because of injuries or suspension. But at the moment, yeah, there's probably only the back four that is the only thing that's settled at the moment. But yeah, four changes for the front four was very interesting indeed. Shall we talk about the first half, boys? Because it wasn't a great half a town, despite having most of the domination. It felt like we were the home team and Bristol City the away team, which by sort of helped Bristol City a little bit. They got their goal. But yeah, AJ, bring you in. Your sort of reflection on the first half, because yeah, we had all the possession, but yeah, it was Bristol City who got the opener.
I really liked the first 15 minutes from Ipswich. I thought they started it really well, and I didn't see a way that Bristol City were going to claw their way back in. And I thought, especially the way that Ipswich were building and around the quarter of hour mark, I felt that they were really starting to grow into the game. I thought, you know what, get the goal. And I think they're really going to struggle to come back into this, because it's a Bristol City side that were playing a 3-4-2-1. It's their natural shape, but they're missing Jason Knight, who is their ever-present man in midfield. He's there every single game. He's literally, I don't think he's missed I think he's featured in every competitive game that he's played, that Bristol City have played since signing for them in the summer of 2023. That then meant that there was a bit of a restructure, and you see Viner coming into midfield. So not only is it a 3-4-2-1, but your right-sided centre-mid is a natural centre-back. So I was thinking at that point, get the goal, and if you're forcing Bristol City to come up that shell after that, it might be quite difficult for them, especially the way that Ipswich were playing. It didn't feel at that point like it was too many sideways passes. It felt like they knew what they were doing. They were pulling people out of positions. They were creating space ahead of them. There were some kind of early sights of goal where they just weren't able to pull the trigger. Jack Clark had a good one. There was some good combination down the right, which allowed Furlong to cross just in front of Azon. So bits that I liked there. And then, I mean, yeah, Bristol City, I wrote in my tweet, in that first 15 minutes had the penetration of a wet sponge thrown at a wall, which is really what it felt like. They just offered nothing. And then the one chance kind of bubbles behind. I think it might have come off Furlong off the top of my head. Goes behind, it's a corner. And that's where Bristol City score. And it's not one that Ipswich get horribly wrong from the replays, but it is one where they should be doing a little bit better with just a bit of positioning. The ball kind of scuffs just over the head of Furlong, which I don't think was really expected. And then it's Atkinson with his, what was the phrase again that Struber used? I really like that.
He built a tower.
Yes, that was it. Atkinson then built his tower in between Greaves and I can't remember off the top of my head, but essentially in the middle of the box. It's a corner delivered by Mometi, brilliant player, by the way, who delivers it just kind of right on top of the goalkeeper as well. So it's kind of right in the mixer territory. Difficult for Ipswich to defend, a couple of little bits off, and that's where a team with big, beefy centre-backs like Atkinson and Dickey in there are able to punish you. So go behind, and at that point you're expecting a reaction from Ipswich, but it goes the other way, really, in terms of the momentum.
Yeah, but Stu, another set-piece goal. Portsmouth last weekend, which was just a consolation in the end, thankfully, but this was obviously an opener for Bristol City, and like many teams, sometimes when you're 1-0 up, you know, I know you're at home, but they could have defended for their lives and just been happy with 1-0.
Yeah, certainly something Ipswich have got to look at. I've highlighted it in a recent piece, and I think it's still the case that Ipswich have the second lowest XG against in the entire division. I would say, on the whole, they're looking defensively sound, organised. They're not conceding tons of chances in football matches, but if you include the Blackburn game, they've conceded 7 goals in 7 games. And if you go through them off the top of my head, the Blackburn goal was a bit of a sort of a direct moment, and the ball ended up looping over Palmer off the post, rebound finish. Preston, long ball.
You meant Birmingham, didn't you? Blackburn was a penalty.
Birmingham, sorry. Yeah, start. Yeah, Birmingham from the start. Apologies. Oh, yeah. Southampton then was just a cross from the right and a header, wasn't it? What did we have after Southampton? Preston away, long ball, Greaves gives away the penalty, getting a bit of a muddle there. Both the Derby goals were, again, moments, direct balls forwards that created issues. So they've all, and then we get on to these last couple of games. And they're both set pieces. Portsmouth comes from a corner where I think it's Kipro who probably loses his man looking back at it. And this one, sometimes, I guess, if you score that goal, you go, it's a great set piece. It's a good delivery. It's a towering header. Fair play. But Ipswich had enough bodies around the ball to deal with that. You know, look back at it. The commentator talks about 4 Ipswich players in the vicinity, and he's right. It just, but we're talking a hair's breadth, aren't we? If Furlong gets his head on it, it's well defended, but it just creeps over him and he gets between a bunch of players and it's a good header. But McKenna sort of said there's small details that we didn't get right, and that is something that they've got to look at. So, goals change games, cliche time, but I think especially with Ipswich having a target on their back in this division, when the opposition gets a leg up, gets a goal, it changes things. And if Ipswich had just built their way into that game a little bit longer, got the first goal, they could have passed the ball around to their heart's content and really put some frustration in the home air. Instead, Bristol City go and get the goal, home tails are up, and things became difficult.
Yeah, it did. And I always like to ask this question, AJ. How are you feeling then at half-time? You knew where I was going with it. You obviously you got a great view. You showed me the picture of you guys. You're right up in the gods at Bristol City. But yeah, half time. I'm sure you and Stu have a nice little chin wag as you do, doing your typey types. But yeah, how are you feeling at half time?
One of my favourite press box views. The only annoying bit becomes like, it's really good to have like the Sabutio style view. But then if you're looking for specifics and close-ups, you then don't have the screens in front of you like you would, say, in the Premier League or now at Portman Road. If they had the screens, that might be one of my favourite press box views going. But, yeah, half-time feeling was a bit frustrated and deflated, to be perfectly honest, because I just thought that Ipswich had got themselves into this really strong position in the first 15. Then at half-time, I thought they were a little bit fortunate not to be 2-0 down. The one thing that stood out in my mind was I kind of already at halftime was thinking there's things that aren't really working here. And I don't think that time, at least in the kind of the short term of that match, was going to fix things and you were suddenly going to see a big change. And already I kind of had one eye on, look at the talent on the bench, Egeli, Hurst, Philogene, Smodics being able to come on. Those might be your impact players to get something from this. But what I saw from the first half didn't exactly put me in a strong position to say I feel good going into the second half. But to be fair, having really kind of huffed and puffed towards the end of it and got nowhere with it and had to soak up some real pressure, especially on the counter, how do you start the second half better?
Bristol City's game plan was exactly what you said, Ross, almost to play as the away side at home. They are a counter-attacking side and they're very good at it. But that's not always going to go down well with a home support that expect you to have the ball and be on the front foot. And they were allowing Ipswich to have loads of the ball. And the longer that game had gone on 1-0, even if Ipswich had got a goal, I don't know if that would go down particularly well with home supporters. But once they'd managed to get that goal, probably a little bit against the run of play, that changed everything, because then people are accepting of the fact that they could then sit into, you know, they're playing with wing backs. They dropped into a back five, 5-4-1. At times it was even more across that back five, and they went to Ipswich, go on then, what answers have you got? They let them have the ball, let Ipswich have the ball just over halfway. Loads of possession, but Ipswich didn't really have any answers to it. It was moved the ball far too slow. Maybe some of that is the lack of chemistry that we've talked about so far, but they were looking short of ideas and they were looking vulnerable to that rapid counter-attack as well. Bristol City were patient, they bided their time, and then when they nicked the ball, they countered at pace. And they've got a really good front three. I think Bristol City are the second highest goal scorers in the league at the moment, in Mometi, in Scott Twine, in Emil Reese up top. They've got pace, they've got trickery, they've got shooting ability, and they caused Ipswich some real headaches. So I guess that's a positive to take from this game, that Ipswich limited one of the most dangerous attacking sides in the league to that one goal from a set piece. But there were some nervy moments, and as Alex says, it could have been 2-0 at the break. McCrory had a good headed chance that he put straight at Palmer. And Alex and I sort of looked at each other and said, work to do in this second half. Where's the spark going to come from? How early is Kieran McKenna going to turn to his bench?
Yeah, and but there was an early leveler. That's how you say it, Ross. And it was a penalty, AJ, which, I will admit, I don't know if we would have been able to find a goal. I think Bristol City were just going to be that stubborn. I don't think we were going to be able to score an open play, but thankfully we got the penalty. Jack Clark obviously stepped up, but was it a penalty in your eyes?
I think the first thing to say is it would have been interesting if Ipswich hadn't have had that penalty, what would have happened? Would Bristol City have been able to have sat in and defended and struck on the counter for the
Preston
entire 90 minutes?
Preston 2.0, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but it can also be exhausting. And Preston, for example, had the energy of a million men. They were right up for that. They really were kind of, I think, sensed a bit of a, I guess you could say, giant killing. They really were up for it. Would Bristol City have been able to do the same? We'll never know, because Ipswich, of course, do get the penalty. And they started the second half similar to how they played the first, which was a little bit frustrating. And the first time they start to play football and kind of carve open and create the chance, that's where they win the penalty. So that was the bit that, they needed. They really kind of needed to have that fast, zippy style of play that they lacked a little bit in those first bits, where Bristol City were actually really good at those, and they were the team that were able to just kind of zip the ball around really quickly, really accurately. It comes down the left, it's Davis, it's Clark, and then it's through to Akpom, tripped in the box. Then your next question, is it a penalty? Again, I've not been able to see a proper replay of this, but the one that we saw with the screens in the stadium, the little screen in front of us, made it look like there wasn't much in that one, to be perfectly honest. But Gerhard Struber said it was a penalty. I believe Kieran McKenna was probably going to be in agreement. And at first view, from where we were, obviously a long old way up in the ground, it looked stonewall, looked clear as day. You can see different angles and slow it down into different bits. If I'd seen that at full speed and I was a referee, I would have probably given that as a penalty, I think. Should McCrory have seen red? He was on a yellow from the first half. That's the only other debate. I'm not sure exactly what the rule would be there with it being a penalty. But yeah, two sides of that one. It is a penalty, and Jack Clark does the business.
And I know you mentioned Stu in your video verdict with AJ after the game. Check that out if you haven't already. Available for our subscribers. But yeah, I think you got a bit of flack saying, what side are you on, Stu? Because yeah, you felt it was a bit soft.
Like Alex, in real time, at full speed, which I always think is the best indicator to go on instinct, Stonewall looked like he just ran across his heels. Then a few minutes later, I don't know if it was someone in the media team or an analyst at Bristol City, they were a good three rows down in front of us, and it was on a fairly small laptop screen that was on a kind of minimised part of the screen as well. But they were chopping up the footage and the slowed down footage. And Akpom goes past McCrory, and there's probably a good half a yard of space before then the sort of the, you know, his legs collapse and he goes down, and you start to think, maybe it was a dive, maybe it's one he bought. And that's why I put some tweets out saying sort of very dubious penalty based on that. I then got a load of responses saying, what are you on about? It was a penalty. Then I hear the Bristol City manager say, I've got no problems with it. Then I've watched it back a few more times. And I think the defender's reaction says a lot. I think that, you know, it was the very guilty kind of both hands up, but certainly wasn't, you know, incensed with the referee about it. It's impossible to say from that angle. Thank God we didn't have VAR that was analysing it to within an inch of its life and slowing it down frame by frame and different angles. We don't need that, do we? So penalty again, not another one. How many is that this season? We were trying to work it out. Six, did we decide?
Five and a half. Depends if we're counting Blackburn or not.
Yeah. Yeah, so lots of penalties.
But it doesn't count anymore. Like, it happened. Like, we, you know, conceded a penalty from...
It didn't.
Yeah, it's Campbell, but
wiped.
Yeah. But then Jake Greaves was suspended. So...
You can't ask the EFL to be consistent, Ross. Come on.
I know. But so, yeah, technically it's six, but it's five and a half. But, you know. Yeah. And Jack Clark is obviously the one who's been able to take the last two for Town. Obviously, George Hurst at Birmingham. The Preston guy, can't say his name, he scored their penalty. And then...
Osmajic.
That's the one. And then, yeah, Cantwell's goal. So, that's at the six? Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. It's a lot of penalties, which... You're saying last night in the last championship campaign, I can't remember as many penalties as we've got so far.
No, I'd have to go back and look at the stats on that, but it's probably, I would say, in terms of penalties for and against, may well have surpassed that in terms of levels that you get an entire season. So maybe I'm wrong on that, but gut feeling is that it certainly is a lot of penalties at this stage of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And that was, what, the 52nd, third minute, something like that. So a good half an hour or so for Town to find a winner. How would you then look at that period? Because, yeah, Town were trying to knock the door down. But, yeah, it was a bit of frustration in my eyes. What do you reckon, Stu? Where do you want to go from here?
Second half? Yeah, probably much of the same, really, in terms of not quite having the answer to get more. I thought, you know, showed good character and still wanting to try and win the game, to go and get an extra goal. But as I said right at the start, it's work in progress. They're not quite clicking at the moment. And I think there's still a few players finding their feet. We can probably talk about a few individuals. Casey McAteer, not quite happening for him at the moment. At the start of his Ipswich career, you know, we're told that he's been brought in to be sort of the pacey, direct running right winger in the sort of form of a Wes Burns. But I'm yet to see too much evidence of him kind of jetting past his man and driving crosses into the box. Not quite happening for him at the moment. Chubarak Pom, I think, is... He's not there yet in terms of what he can do. He's not quite sure what his role is at the moment. He's sort of the number 10, but he's dropping very, very deep. I'd prefer to see him, you know, the penalty comes from him actually being up there and joined with the attack a little bit more, getting into the box, and that's what happens. He wins the penalty, but at times I feel like he's been dropping too deep and trying to come and join play a little bit too much. And then, you know, we get on to a couple of the new boys, which we can talk about in a bit more depth, who, you know, certainly in the case of Marcelino Nunez, looks like someone who, there was a bit fair bit of ring rustiness about him last night. So is it a true reflection of what this Ipswich side can be and hopefully will be? Probably not. We didn't come away sort of too excited by anyone, did we, from last night? I think that's fair to say.
No, I don't think we learned any more with certain players. I want to mention, though, Ovan is on, AJ, because that's his first start, the Shark. Thoughts on his first league start and just him as a player so far?
It was kind of similar to the cameos that we've seen from him, just over an extended period, over about, I think he had 73 minutes on the pitch, wasn't it? Yeah, a couple of sides to this. He didn't have a lot to do, but I mean, you also have to factor in that strikers need service. Strikers need the players behind them to put the balls into good position for them to do something. And Azon had very little to work with in this game. The one opportunity I can remember was that right-sided link-up play where Furlong crosses, the one I mentioned before, and Azon gets himself into a good position, but Vitek, the goalkeeper, just beats him to it. Other than that, he had so little to work with, and he was chasing, he was physical, he took a pretty nasty whack to the head and needed patching up for that one. I think he might have actually had a couple in that game. So he played on through that. He, as I said, gets himself about some bits in terms of his footwork and hold-up play that will need a little bit of work. You could sense that there was a time, for example, he's on the edge of the box and he's got three defenders. As I said, the big, beefy Bristol City defenders, which is satisfying to say, kind of all quite near around him. And he knows that the size difference is clear. He's not going to be able to shrug them off the ball. He tries to turn into space. Looks like he's making some progress, but in the end, surrenders possession and Bristol City are able to counter up the other end. So bits like that will need some work, but ultimately it's a football player who has only, I mean, basically he's only really played in the second tier of Spanish football, hasn't he? Because he didn't kick a ball for Como in a competitive match. He played for them in pre-season. It's quite a big step up to go from what is, as I said, basically the Spanish second tier into the English second tier. And it'll take a little bit of time for him still to get to grips with a very different style and a very different kind of system in English football, in Ipswich's kind of setup. Yeah, will take a bit of time. We'll need some patience, but still enough that I like from him. I love the spirit and motivation. I love his pre-match interviews as well. He seems great fun. A little taster of what we can get from him. But I think that, yeah, as I said, it'll take a bit of time.
Yeah, definitely. He wasn't happy with the ref, by the way, when he hit his head. He was like looking at the ref, like giving him daggers, like, what? What have you allowed this to happen? But yeah, Ivan Azon. Yeah, we've got more to come from him, definitely. Stu, do you want to earmark any players? Like Casey McAteer is getting a bit of slack. You know, he's, you know, £11.5 million. He's not really been able to show what he's worth at the moment. Yeah, thoughts on him?
Yeah, I don't want to sort of pile on too early on these players because they are very early into their Ipswich Town careers, but there will come a point, you know, where you start to want a little bit more. That's four league starts now for Casey McAteer, and from those four games I couldn't come up with loads of examples of things that have jumped off the page and excited. We've talked about it a lot on this pod and in written pieces about how former fans' favourites probably took a fair bit of time to find their feet. And just because there's some big price tags associated with these players, they're still human beings, you know, coming to a new place to live, new club, new manager, new teammates. So they are going to require a little bit of time. But four games in, haven't seen loads from Casey McAteer so far. One thing I would say is that he brings a bit of something in terms of his height. He's, you know, he can win some decent headers. I know we talked about him being part of the group that didn't quite deal with the set piece goal. But some of those sort of big diagonals out to him, he's won some towering headers and flick-ons there. But I want to see a bit more of him on the ball, taking people on and having a bit more confidence. He kind of epitomised a couple of times when you thought, come on then, go on then, turn up the tempo, whether it be zipping a few more passes or someone just taking people on. So hopefully a lot more to come from him. Yeah, I thought Azon, sort of bearing in mind he fed off scraps, as Alex says, he plays with his heart on his sleeve, as we were promised, and put himself about. He'll be better for it. Nunez wants the ball all of the time. Probably helped Ipswich in terms of that sort of domination of possession, but there were a couple of little sloppy moments where he gave it away, a couple of moments where someone sort of breezed past him or shrugged him off. But, you know, it's been six weeks since he started a game. He picked up that ankle injury. Again, it's just another step forward for him. So, more to come, hopefully. And I think we're going to be stuck in this little kind of holding pattern for the foreseeable, which is, I get it, it's frustrating. I know people want more. And hopefully it will come. And if it doesn't, there will come a point in time where we can start talking about how well has this money been invested and is this group better than what we had before. But I think it's too early, as I've said, to be making any kind of grand assessments on that side of things.
Yeah, don't write players off this early days. You know, give him a few months and then we can then go back and look. But yeah, Nunez needs to improve his set pieces. I know he had a good one against Sheffield United where he scored, but in this game, not too good. And then that sort of segues nicely, AJ, onto the end. This game felt like it was destined for a point. Bristol City, though, had a few chances. Palmer had to make a good save. Town had some late set pieces and they were not that great. You know, bless him, Sindre Wally Ageli, stepped up and he was in good positions, but they, didn't go very far. Well, he went far, but they went very well wide.
Yeah, I did go far, that one, just not in the right direction. Yeah, I mean, the end of this game, the second half in general, kind of the pendulum swung different ways time to time. I thought after Ipswich scored, they were looking the more likely to go and get a second and kind of that 10-15 minute period afterwards. Should be said, actually, that was the loudest Ashtergate was all night. It was after Ipswich scored. I thought their fans were right up for it at 1-1, and it kind of petered out a little bit after that. Funnily enough, that was at the point that then Bristol City started to have some of those chances. They bring on players, one of them Sinclair Armstrong. We all remember Sinclair Armstrong, don't we, from QPR, who was just an absolute nightmare for Ipswich to play against, and all sorts of calls for him to be signed by Ipswich, despite the fact that I think that game was probably the only good one he had for QPR that season. He then, actually, to be fair to him, comes on for Bristol City against Town last night, played quite well, got into a really good position where he gets played through one-on-one, just takes a little bit long with the shot where he blasts it into Palmer, who stands tall to make the save. Town, of course, have some subs of their own that come on, just didn't really have the chance to impact it. The closest that we get is George Hurst, who has a really good header from a corner that he should do better with, because he's able to peel away totally unmarked and heads over the crossbar. Jaden Philogene, a few nice flicks and tricks, but didn't have a lot of space to operate in down that flank. Sammy Smodix didn't have a great deal to do. Ageli, again, in terms of what he was able to offer, will mostly be remembered for that free kick. Wasn't helped that there was a lot of build-up time before that, which kind of built up the hype and expectation, only for him to leather it into the away end, unfortunately, instead of trying to get it onto the head of a defender. I think that was one where he saw his name light up and thought, yeah, I'll go for goal here. Didn't quite work out. Smodics, as I said, I think only had four touches coming on against his former club. So, yeah, bits from there that were good to see. It's good to see these players being able to come on and try and impact games. Just didn't really work out in that sense too much. A point, probably the right result.
Yeah, and we're going to hear from Alex Palmer now, boys, before we get Stu's final assessment on the game. But, yeah, Alex Palmer, over to you, Town's goalkeeper.
Alex, what do you make of that one tonight?
Yeah, tough test. I think it was always going to be. They're a team that are well organised, got good players, and So I think it was definitely mentioned how tough a game it was, and we've probably not worked the goalkeeper enough tonight, but I felt like we played pretty well and kept the ball in their half, but yeah, struggled to really sort of create those killer chances and get that win.
Classic away game in the Championship, isn't it, when you've got to fight hard and hopefully get something from it, which you managed in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Like everyone keeps saying, every game in the Championship is tough. Everybody wants to come and beat us, everybody wants to make it hard for us, and we know that. And that's where we've got to be better on the ball sometimes and be more patient and try and drag people out of positions and stuff. But yeah, it's we limited them as well. And like I said, they're a good team, they've got good players, so it's plenty of positives in there for us.
Not the third successive win you wanted, but a little bit of momentum at the moment, do you feel behind you?
Yeah, like I said, the performances are getting there. Obviously, we want to try and replicate our home form that I think that we found, and try and just come to each and every game and just try and we try and win. That's what we try and do. I think you can see it. We're not trying and playing for points and stuff. Every game we go into, we want to win. We get those 3 points because we know how important it is.
And everybody contributes. I mean, 6 changes tonight. There were 2 lads made their full debut at the weekend. Another 2 tonight.
Yeah, and that highlights how good the squad is, and that players can come in and rotate. And like I said, it's tough. It's a tough league. Lots of games, and especially sort of a 3-game week where changes are going to have to be made. But yeah, special mention to the boys making their debuts and some of them that played really, really well.
Okay, then Stu. Good point. We're going to also hear from Kieran McKenna, who said it was a good point as well. On the road, you win your home games, away from home, get a point, happy days. So how do you think a good point for Town, especially with how the game was panning out?
I think so, yeah. And I think it probably was about right as a result as well, which 64% possession looking at it, which is, you know, a rarity away from home. 15 shots, only 3 of them on target. Quite a lot from long range. Bristol City had their moments on the counter-attack, but we'll feel that they didn't do enough with it as well. So I think honours even was about right in a game of kind of few clear-cut chances. Yeah, I'll just reiterate what I said at the start, really. Lots to work on. They need to start tightening up and stopping these little lapses in concentration that are giving them not mountains to climb, but making that target on their back even bigger in games. And hopefully that attacking chemistry will grow over time, because those kind of almost telepathic patterns of play that we came to know and love just aren't quite there at the moment. But hopefully it will come.
Yes, indeed. And maybe this Sunday we shall see. We're going to hear now from Kieran McKenna. As I mentioned, you asked him, Stu, about the point. Let's see what he had to say.
Is a draw about right, do you think, on the balance of play? And then do you think coming away from home, somewhere like this, a team that were in the playoffs last season, they're good points when you look back, ultimately?
Who knows? We're not worrying about, you know, what the table... Not worrying, but not thinking about what the table's going to be like at the end, or whether this will be a good point or a bad point. It's just trying to take the right steps as a team. I think the balance of play looks an unusual one. You come away from a team who've usually got a positive, aggressive mindset and have 70% possession first half. It means you've done some things well, but yeah, they did carry that transition threat and a set play threat, and really sort of broke the game at times. So it was, that made it really tough. So look, there's definitely positives you can take from coming away from home in first midweek game with a group that are still settling in, with a couple of players making debuts. And from the way that we started the game, you can take positives. And from the fact that we went 1-0 down but still found a way to get back into the game and still sort of believed that we could get the winner, although they had a couple of moments as well. But I felt like we believed that we could get the winner and the players wanted to push for the winner. I think there's positives in that. And, you know, we take them forward, especially going into Sunday.
OK, then. Now, shall we draw a line on Bristol City? It was always annoying that we had that game, you know, because we've got the East Anglian derby build-up. It was in the back of our minds. We wanted to talk about it, but we couldn't because we had Bristol City first of all. But it's now here, boys. We're not going to cover it too much on this podcast because we're going to be going live on Friday night. And it'd be great to hear from you guys and you join us live, ask some questions. We're hopefully going to have a Norwich insight as well. One of the Pinkham boys who are part of our sister paper, who's going to give their insight on the Canaries, who are playing tonight against West Brom. So I'll be interested to see how they get on. But AJ, any other business as we wrap up another Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast?
Squash. Other than that, no. Other than that.
Squash. Yeah, put on a T-shirt. Stuart, anything else from you?
No, so we should probably tell people the time. I think we're going to try and go live at 7 p.m. on Friday night. We'll put the links across our various social media channels. So join us if you can. We'll make that nice and interactive. I'm fascinated to see what the mood is. We've bumped into lots of Ipswich fans on our journeys over the last couple of days. Nerves, I think, is you know, a bit nervous is the general kind of feedback. That is natural, and it will be the same, let me tell you, for Norwich as well. I know there's a lot of talk about the wait history and 16 years and never beating them, but Norwich fans must be thinking, when this finally ends, because it will at some point, you know, then there's very little left there for the kind of bragging rights debate, isn't there, at the moment, with the way the tide has turned. So, look, we're all scarred by the last 16 years or so, but very few of this squad are. You have to remember, there's few that have got links to the past. What's gone on before doesn't mean an awful lot to them. This is a new squad. They're going to get the bus welcome on Sunday morning. That will hopefully lift them, give them a little reminder of what this means. But, you know, their feeling isn't going to be nerves. Their feeling, hopefully, is going to be of excitement, of opportunity, of a chance to write yourself into club folklore. And we're talking about, I just get the feeling that fans haven't quite bonded with this group yet. It's a sense of still not quite let go of the promotion heroes of the past. But get a win over that lot and that could change. It feels not just important because it's Norwich. We're going into an international break. Everyone's still feeling a little bit unsure about the direction of travel. I really hope they can win this game. I really do. We'll get our teeth into it on Friday. Now, I'm fascinated to kind of get a sense of how you're all feeling out there. So we'll see you on Friday night.
Yes, Friday night, 7 p.m. on Facebook and the YouTube. So tune in and get involved. It's going to be a great show as we build up to the derby. But yeah, of course, the final bit thing to mention is our sponsors, Stardust Spirits. AJ, you said you're going to down the rest of your Stardust Spirits, so do that right now.
Right, okay. Bottoms up, everything. Sorry, can't do that live on there.
Friday night. Yeah. But yeah, KOA, use the code to get 20% off. And you've got, what's that you got there? A Biscoff?
It's my favourite, my handcrafted spirit-based Biscoff biscuit vodka liqueur. Nice. The best one you can get. I love it. It's great stuff.
Lovely. Yeah, KOA, Stardust Spirits, check them out. Another local company. And also, Molek, you la. I can't say it right properly, like where it goes, boom. But another great company. Stu, they do some great stuff. They do stuff that I can't use at the moment because, for obvious reasons, I can't drive. They do some good stuff.
So I'm told, yes. Molecular. I like the way you say it now, as if you're one of those kind of AI bots, kind of ask Alexa, and that's how. Molecular.
Yeah,
it's good. I like it. They're certainly getting good airtime from it, so continue.
Oh, definitely. But yeah, use the code KOA10 to get a discount on your, you know, cleaning projects for your car. No, products for your car. But yeah, two very good local businesses supporting the podcast. And if you haven't already, make sure to follow us on all our socials, Kings of Anglia. And I don't know if we have had a 5-star review recently, but if we haven't, then make sure to give us a review. Let us know your thoughts on the podcast and just some feedback, anything we need to improve on. But yes, we'll be live, as I mentioned, Friday night on the YouTubes, on the Facebook, 7 p.m. Join us there. And thanks again for listening. Enjoy the rest of your week and bring on the derby. Bye-bye for now.